I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are in the studio of St. John the Evangelist today, which, considering that our name for the podcast comes from the Gospel of John, the fact that we have never used this name before is a serious oversight, and I blame the two of you.
We repent of this, as we're in this Lenten spirit.
Clearly, I'm out of touch with things, so I expect you guys to help me out, and so I'm grateful for your repentance. I receive that, and I forgive you. Waiting for an apology over on this end of the room.
Is there a crickets button?
Yeah, that was good.
Nailed it.
I'm not apologizing for anything.
You're a terrible confessor, I'm sure. Today I am apparently not helped by the guilty but repentful Father Garrett Burns.
How are we doing?
And the unrepentful and blameworthy Father Drew Hoffman.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Luckily, the podcast is lifted up today by our guest, Father John Tolbert. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here.
And it's John the Event. You're Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan.
Is there a Saint Jonathan?
No, I mean, I guess Old Testament, David's son. But one time I asked my parents what my patron saint was, and they said John the Baptist. So I don't know how I just celebrate all the Johns.
David's son or best friend?
Oh, best friend, Saul's son. Sorry.
That's right. Yeah.
New priest, am I right, guys? Yeah.
Embarrassing. Okay. For an older priest, I'd cut that out, but I'm going to leave that error in the podcast.
I needed another year. We wouldn't have had a gap then, you know?
Growing up, did people call you Jonathan? Because I've always known you as John. Does anyone call you Jonathan?
A couple of people do. My mother, certainly, when I'm in trouble. But it actually started in second grade. I was pretty intelligent, and I made a wise business decision here. I decided, do I want to learn 8 letters or 3 letters? And so in second grade, I just decided J-O-N, way easier than John.
You even go the easiest possible route of spelling John.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, nice. It tends to be my way of operating at times.
We never call you John because we always called you Dustpan.
Yes.
Yes. Where did that name come from?
From my understanding, Andrew Bina just saw you using a dustpan one time.
It was your first summer.
I've never known you by that name, but I've heard many people refer to you that way.
My first ever seminary thing, we were cleaning the cathedral for ordinations, and it was Andrew Bina and then Father Devin Burns. Somebody asked us to sweep the outside walkway of the cathedral. And I was like, okay. So went and they grabbed the brooms, being good older guys. And then I was like, oh, well, we're going to need a dustpan. And then they yelled, dustpan boy! But that was too long. So then they just had to shorten it to dustpan.
That's a very Bina move right there.
So perfect. Devin egging him on.
Yeah. That is on the mark right there.
And then it stuck for like 4 years. That's what...
Well, John is one of the 3 new priests of the diocese.
Yep. The newest. Congratulations.
Newest, yeah. So not quite... about 9 months now?
Oh my gosh.
Not quite a year.
That's crazy.
We did announce, I don't know if you know, we announced your upcoming ordination on this podcast. So if you felt any extra graces in that moment, it's because the listeners of this podcast were praying for you.
Thank you all so much.
So we've been a fan of you from the start here on the podcast.
Great.
Big fans. Huge.
So ordained less than a year, you're the assistant pastor, associate pastor at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton.
Woo woo!
And so that's
your home parish.
The Dolphins.
Yeah.
No, but don't.
That's a dolphin Please noise.
Please no. That's okay.
Can you do your dolphin?
Not gonna do
it. That's better.
That's better. That is definitely better. Well, you've been ordained less than a year now, and so I guess I want to start the show with, have there been moments that have surprised you? So Chrism is still fresh on you. We haven't even had the new Chrism Mass yet. And so what surprised you either positively or negatively in the last year that you didn't see coming?
Yeah, there were certainly a lot of surprises, you know, just showing up to a new parish, you know, parish I didn't know much about. We call it C's. It's a little less wordy, but...
You're all about the shortness of the names exactly, everywhere.
Exactly. And so showing up to C's was, it was a lot of emotions, you know, nervous excitement. And then the first surprise was probably Father Orr's dogs. He is a big Weimaraner and a yellow lab. And so they, you know, growling at me and whatnot. And
you had dogs growing up though, right?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I just wasn't, maybe they were smaller dogs. Isn't the
thing. They're big dogs. They're scary dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're very energetic as I recall.
Yeah. The Weimaraner is, he's definitely the hyperactive type of dog, but.
So you said they growled at you, the dogs and Father Orr?
Or a little bit of both. Yeah, a little bit of both. No.
One is scarier than the other in that scenario.
Father Orr greeted me smoking a cigar, and that was like, okay, get too used to that, you know? Which is, I mean, I like cigars, so it wasn't a big deal.
My very first assignment with Father Tom Stroot down in Pittsburgh, the very first thing he said to me, I walk in through the door. Well, the first thing he said to me is like, you're early. Oh, I didn't know there was a time I was supposed to be here. I'm like, do you want me to leave and come back?
I guess I could go to a coffee shop for a bit.
Right, right. Yeah. So then the next thing he's like, I don't like to babysit people. And then he kind of walked off and he came back and gave me a tour. Those were my introduction at Pittsburgh is you're really? Early and I don't like to babysit people.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, Father.
I didn't know what to do with that as a newly ordained.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that why you're late to stuff now?
That's right. Yeah. It was traumatic. Deeply instilled into me. I never show up early anymore.
Tolbert and I were roommates for his first month of priesthood.
That's right.
He lived in my basement for the first month of priesthood.
I forgot about that.
A lot of people are saying, did I form him? Did he learn? What? Did
the answer is no.
Didn't even have to think about one.
We were like ships in the night.
We weren't around that much. Because summer, I'm not around. Right, I was on retreat and I was on doing trips and stuff like that. And so same with him. So we didn't overlap very much.
No, but those few times we did, of course.
Some great memories.
Very important for me. Yeah,
deeply
the way
seated
that I
memories.
See the world changed. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You comb your hair a little bit similar.
Yeah. He wishes.
I don't know.
Are you worried that baldness is coming in hot?
No, I'm not worried. I knew
we would get to that.
It is coming. I decided to go with a shorter haircut to like let it happen. That was a surprise. One time, the first time I realized I'm balding, there was a clump of hair.
Oh my gosh.
It was so disgusting. And I was like, no.
Oh, no.
Wow. That's rough.
But so there's like the actual, you know, good surprises of everything. The people of God, I mean, they were so welcoming at C's. And I shouldn't have like thought, oh, that's going to be a surprise. But there was something about their warmth that just let me know I was home. And I needed some sense of like, okay, this is going to be my home for, you know, for the foreseeable future. And so there was just a lot of excitement around the new guy, you know, showman around all this stuff. And it took a bit to find the groove of the parish. And that was that moment. I'll remember that moment of like not having to think ahead. I know what's coming and just finding the groove. That was a good moment.
I remember that too in Pittsburgh. Just, you know, the people of God are good. And that, but like, I felt so loved.
Right.
I really did that first year and other years too. But it's just that it's just surprising. Like I feel people are excited that I'm here and they love me being here.
And your first year is particular because you're not that good at your job.
Yeah.
It's true.
So you're like,
it's true.
I actually am not that good at this stuff. I don't remember your name. My homilies are maybe kind of a mess sometimes and things like that. So there's this experience of not deserving, quote unquote, to receive that love. That's at least what you feel. And then you realize what real love is. It's not an earned thing. And so I think particular first year, that's the experience.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
I think especially more because you go from being super comfortable and like you're the leader at the seminary.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Yep.
You know what is coming each and every day and people are looking to you for guidance. And then you show up day one and like, I know nothing. All these other people here, this is their parish. They've worked here for 20 years. They've been parishioners for however long, decades.
Sure.
And so
this is the C's way. You hear that a
lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right. And so you become much more dependent, which is a beautiful way to experience that their love instead of just being the guy that's in charge and knows what's happening. So
on the other end of that, I don't know if you have had this experience or it surprised me too, of people asking my advice. You know, you older people who are holier than me asking my advice, and you get used to seminary where, frankly, no one asks your advice in day-to-day life.
And that's a surprise in the seminary. Like,
wait, you care what I have to think about or say about this? That took me back the first year.
Yeah, for sure. But you figure it out, and like you said, where you're not really good at it.
that's the crazy, only way to, man.
That's what I, maybe I referenced this before, but that's the Michael Scott quote I gave to Father Hayden when he got ordained was, I knew exactly what I was doing, but in a much more real way, I had no idea what I was doing. It's like, that's first year plus of priesthood.
And admitting that though, it just like endears you even more. Like, there's almost not much you can do to really like not make them love you, if that makes sense. Like there's such a love for the priesthood in our diocese, and it's just been a joy and an honor to be able to receive that.
And you can always play the dumb card.
Oh yeah.
Which is, and I'm now almost 2 years into St. Paul. It's like, I'm running out of those cards. And it's a bummer. It legit is a bummer.
The deck is getting empty.
Like, I know how things run and how things are going, but first year you can all, like, I didn't know that was going. Like, I don't know how to do that. Or, like, people, they just hesitate to get mad at you because you're a new person.
Mm-hmm. I can still play that card as a visiting, when I do coverage. I'm like, I don't know what we're doing. I'm just here to say Mass. I don't know how you guys do it here.
Yeah, I think Father Adam Grellinger came and covered one time, and he had a whole, like, six questions he was asking, like, do we do petitions, sign a peace, like, all of these. How do we do it at Seas? And I was like, oh, I guess this is what traveling priesthood is like. You gotta.
I wish I thought about that. I get to the moment, like, I wonder if we do this. I'm going to pause a second and see if they're waiting or they move on. And it's just a little knee-jerk reaction. Now, I remember one of the strongest memories for me in first year of priesthood is when August rolled around and I didn't have to pack bags. Like, I remember deeply just sitting in my room like, holy cow, this is where I live. There is no moving now. Things stay under the bed. Things are in the closet. And it being a moment really of kind of a profound joy of like, this is where I live. Sure. Did that strike you did you have any moment like that?
It hasn't really hit me in that way. There was the moment where I was like, I guess I schedule my vacations now, or like the time off. That was I guess that's part of school, right? Is, you know, Thanksgiving break, Christmas break. But I'm sure this August, you know, having like lived there a full year, it'll be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like this isn't new. This is the place that I am. And I'm sure I'll have some sort of a moment like that then.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I always do during clergy conference is I plan my vacations and retreat out for the full year. So
what?
It's just one of the things I do. That's
I like it.
Because it's a good time because all the other priests are there. So if you're making plans with other guys, you can immediately talk to guys. And sometimes it has been known to happen in clergy conferences where one of the speakers is not as engaging as maybe you hope for. And you need something to do there. And so I'm like, where will I go in December? hey, Ben, or you want to go out and do this? Yeah. And you can kick around ideas in communal way.
And sometimes the speaker might even give you ideas like driving your Bronco up a mountain
and watching
the sunrise.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Our last speaker said, you know, people that have four-wheel drive, they never go off-roads. And half the room looked over in my
that
corner.
That was funny.
I went and showed him the picture because I had just gotten back like 2 weeks before of doing a mountain pass in Colorado. I'm like, no one. Some of us do.
The Arnold's always the exception to the rule.
That is good.
It's on our family crest. The exception. That's it's in Latin. One thing that we recently discovered here on the podcast is that there are not any blonde saints that we're aware of, male saints. Are there any red-haired saints?
No.
Have you looked into this? Are you aware of this?
Isn't Judas traditionally redhead?
That was the first thing that came to mind is like there was this painting in Conception at the seminary college cafeteria, and Judas is without a halo and redheaded. And so everyone would point that out to me.
It's the same way in our chapel here at the house, the stained glass window. Judas is the only, and it's bright red hair.
There's no getting away from it.
For those who have not met Father Tolbert, again, aggressively balding up top.
Thank you. Just keep repeating that.
Thick red beard underneath the chin. A strong red beard.
Yeah. I've really gotten into the whole like beard oil world. It's wild.
Listen to yourself.
I know. I love it.
You are probably, would you say, I don't think this is offensive, but correct me if it is. The most ginger priest in the diocese, are we allowed to say that?
I don't think that's offensive.
I've made my peace with it. There's not many.
Panera would be a second.
But you're redder on top than Zach is.
The reddest hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Isaac has like kind of a really burnt red.
Yeah.
Yeah. His color. Especially in the beard. Yeah. Yeah. Their red comes out in the beard. You got the full.
None of the older guys have red hair. Is that a decision?
Mike Nolan.
It turns white pretty quick.
Mike Nolan has some red hair.
I was going to say, maybe McGinnis wasn't allowing in redheads or something
or
Billinger.
Now, yeah. We have, here at the House of Formation, we actually have what is known as the Ginger Room.
Yeah.
There are two guys who are roommates for the sole reason that they're both redheads. They didn't know each other beforehand. Like, I'm redhead, you're redhead. We should have a room together. And so there's the Ginger Room.
Who's the only person that knows how to communicate to a redhead?
We'll know
another redhead.
Known, seen, loved. That's the only... Man.
But do you know any saints? Do you?
I none of them actually. Mm. But on that note of the a ginger room, Father Orr is also a redhead.
Oh, good point.
Well,
he's bald now.
I was going to say about you pretty soon. Yeah.
But I mean, like in his beard, if he grows it out, there's some
I
red
forgot
still
about
in
that.
Yeah.
It's still red on the sides there for him.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he doesn't, I think he takes a two pretty regularly, like the guard and touches everywhere on his face.
So Father Orr is going to be the first redhead saint. So
yeah.
that's the
Wouldn't
plan.
Doubt it.
Pray for us.
Yeah. We'll name the studio after him. So the other important question, we just started talking about this in one of our last podcasts, and I think it's an important thing that we're going to have to look into more. Zombie apocalypse. Where's the safest place at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton to go to if you have to fend off zombies?
The room right next to mine, actually.
Oh, yeah?
It is the locked door through which you go through to the locked safe. And then it's the armory.
You know, you go.
That's where Father Orr keeps his guns because he goes hunting a lot. So,
the rest of the parish, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. immediately. Not worried about it. You know. Water source. We got a pond right next to the lake. Mm-hmm. Right
that's
next to
point.
The rectory. So we'll be
fine. We started talking with Nelson about it, and I think it has to be a regular segment.
Yeah,
understand
for everybody.
Safe places in the diocese for zombie apocalypse. This is,
I would imagine, St. Mark's. There's a lot of safe places to go.
Yeah, and a lot of backup militia. I mean, they're ready for bear out there. So, zombie bears may be a thing. Who knows? Well, since you are closer in age to our listeners who are discerning. You know all the young people stuff, the Pokemons and the Go-Gurts and all of that stuff.
Wrong generation, but close.
Go-Gurt.
Pokemon and Go-Gurt. You're so
who
old.
Doesn't
I actually get stoked
Go-Gurt.
When I go over to the school lunch and they have Go-Gurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes me back.
Well, see, you are in a different decade than the rest of us here in the room, and so closer to those. So thought it'd be a great thing if you'd be willing to share your vocation story and how that unfolded.
Sure, absolutely. It was kind of always an option, I would say. You know, it was up there with, I was of course going to be Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes, but it was like, be a priest, be a great football player, be a baseball player. It was just have an adventure was kind of what I guess it would have been. And I actually told Father Ken Van Haberbeek in second grade, we were like coming out of church and my parents were right there. And I said, Father, I want to be a priest so that I don't have to go to school as long as everybody else, which is the complete opposite.
Wrong.
Yeah. Mistaken.
And ironically, I even, seminary is a 6 to 8 year track and I did it in 9. So like God really had a sense of humor with that first bit right there. But that sense of like, it could be, it was always there, always a possibility. And it wasn't really, say middle school, I had this teacher who kind of pushed me to live my faith, to start having a relationship with Jesus. And that was kind of new for me. I always known a lot about the faith, growing up in Catholic school, you know a lot about the faith, but living it was something new. And yeah, he had he's probably the first person I'd say he was holy or had that genuine sense about him that I've come to attribute to a sense of holiness. And so I was drawn to him and drawn to the way he lived. And he was actually had left the seminary and gotten married. So there was he kind of knew both sides and was able to help me along there. actually in eighth grade, you know, we do our like yearbook thing and they ask you, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I put down, I'm going to be a priest.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. Pretty
That's
lame.
That's a bold move for an eighth grader to be able to own that.
Yeah. Well, and then I went to high school and I promptly forgot all about it. You know, I thought as an eighth grader, I was like, oh man, high school, you get to do whatever you want, you know? And I was very much a sports guy. I went to Cape and Mount Carmel. Played football at Cape and Mount Carmel, so, you know, you Carroll guys can insert all of your thoughts about...
You might be our first Cape and guest.
I was just thinking.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, we've had a ton of Carroll guests. Yeah. It's almost uncountable.
So many.
They're everywhere, and so...
But we finally found a Cape and guy to come on into the show.
Gosh, yeah. Maybe you wait 10 more years and you'll get another Cape and guy again.
I like that.
Jeez. Yeah, Father Hayden, this is a total aside, but Father Hayden Charles... He turned to me at the end of the Cape and Carroll game this year, and he said, "Welcome to the winning side." Yeah. I was like, "Get out of here!" Frustration. But, anyways, and so football for 4 years. I wrestled for my first three, and then I played baseball for my first two. And so, like those first 2 years of high school, all about sports. I didn't think much of anything else. And as I realized, wow, I'm not as good at sports as I thought I was, and started to take time off of it. I just felt in the silence, you know, the call again, I guess. And he just was persistent. Jesus was just persistent in asking me. I did use it as an excuse once to not do a week's worth of trig. I just said, "Mom, you know, I'm going to be a priest. I don't need to know, you know," which you actually backfire, you know, balance sheets are very, that's a whole nother language to me still.
Your relationship between your vocation and academics has misled you multiple times.
So much. Yeah. But in the end, I just realized, like, as a senior at Capen, I wouldn't be able to say I do. I wouldn't be able to marry and give myself entirely if I didn't check out the seminary, if I didn't give it a shot, because it was such a large part of my heart. And surrounding that was like this desire to help people. That was kind of what it was initially. Like, I didn't really even go to daily mass up until entering the seminary. It wasn't, I mean, I loved the mass and loved it as a kid, but just, I love sleep more, I guess. Mm. And even today, sometimes it's like, oh man, I could snooze just a little bit longer, you know? But then at Conception Seminary College, I just fell in love with the sacraments and that the beauty they are. And then the last like thing to fall would have been, it was celibacy. And so again, at the seminary, we had this class called Chastity and Celibacy. And I really saw the beauty of that way of living.
Who taught that?
Father Xavier.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he's just...
You couldn't ask for a better teacher than that.
Yeah. He was an old monk before I was there. He's just this old Benedictine who's just consumed with love for God, and would just explain the beauty of his life, really. And that led me to see like the radical gift of self that celibacy is, in the way that it's, in a sense, kind of like an adventure. You know, you can be interrupted by anybody and have any level, a depth of conversation. And that has been something that's truly been amazing for me to receive as a priest. And from then on, really, it was like, how do we become a good priest is what I'd say. Like, it kind of felt like I'd made a decision for me. And then it became like, you know, helping the church see the beauty or the qualities that I have that could be a good priest and that could make me a good priest. So, and then theology school was sometimes rocky, but it was really helpful for me to come into that resistance at time to who John Tolbert was. And then it helped me to like solidify, you know, some things fell away, other things grew. And it's just part of the beauty of the seminary. That happens. And so I had laid down my life on May 28th,
29th.
That's awkward.
What?
Wow, that's really awkward. I am
casting no judgment.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank goodness. I don't know what day awkward. It was. It was in May.
Yeah, 29th.
You took a pastoral year.
I did.
Will you talk a little bit about that, particularly with your experience of Andy Walsh? And that, so what does that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And what did you learn from the grumpiest man that you've lived with, the two grumpiest people that I know, who I will honestly never listen to this pod, but is an awesome priest and we all love.
Honestly, they both are not as grumpy as maybe the perception is. Let's start there. But that was probably, that was one of the happiest years of my time to being formed as a priest. Going out there, that was another moment of like, I mean, I'm driving down the highway. Kingman, Kansas is about an hour west of Wichita. And As I'm, well, from my house.
From your house.
Yeah, yeah, from the east side, sorry. In my mind, yeah, you know, the east side's still probably the only side, but that's a growth. That's,
that'll change.
We're working on it, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as I was driving, I was like, okay, one of these cars is not like the other. Here I am with my little Dodge Avenger, you know, my four-door sedan, and everyone else is driving trucks. And I'm like, okay. But they were just, I mean, that was the first real experience of the love of the people of God that we were talking about. And out at Kingman, you know, they still have like, God is number one. And so studying to be a priest, I was immediately given this like special status that, I mean, yeah, there was that whole experience of these older, I mean, I was 24, 23, somewhere around there. And there was just, oh, Father, or John said, that's what we're doing. And I was like, whoa, like, anybody want to challenge that is totally fine. Like it was a blessing to receive their just love. And it makes it so much easier to give yourself to them. Now, what did I do during the time? I arranged.
Shoveled a lot of dirt.
Yeah.
Out of the bell tower, as I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. We cleaned out the bell tower because a part broke in the like automatic thing. And so they put in electric speakers. And so instead of using the actual bell, they just played the speakers. And, you know, Father Andy Walsh, that would not fly for him.
He's
going to have the reel. Also worked cattle, you know, a couple of times. And drove a combine, all these things that
all, like, things to all people.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's just what you enter the people's lives. And that's what Kingman County was.
I remember, so you went there for a pastoral semester, and a lot of guys love their pastoral semester experience. Cause again, it's what you're training for, to be with people and that. But I remember at the end of it in May, you were enjoying St. Patrick's and Kingman and Father Andy so much that you said, usually guys will finish the pastoral semester, come back, and they'll do like a summer assignment. Like,
sure.
Can I work here? I'm like, I don't know if they've got work for you, but if Father Andy agrees with it, sure.
Yeah.
And Father Andy was like, yeah, we'd love to have John. So the parish then hired you for additional work in the summer just because they were enjoying you so much and you were enjoying it so much that, like, if we can get two more months out of this, let's do it.
Yeah. And Andy, we actually sat down and he was like, so what do you want to do this summer? And not in a sense of like, there's nothing to do, but like, you can
be a part of that.
Yeah. Point the parish's life in the summer. And so, you know, it was probably, I'm an extrovert, so it's probably like the most things that have happened in a week, you know, for the longest time at Kingman, because we were just doing stuff. And that was kind of during the COVID time. And, you know, part of their life is the parish. So it still thrived during that time. It was really beautiful to be a part of.
Well, and the other cool thing, too, is when you went back to seminary, as you said, you know, there were some rocky moments there, but to be able to keep going back to, I think we had several conversations, I think, going back to, okay, well, remember why you're doing this. Remember, you know, the goal of Kingman and what it is to love the people and serve the people. And from my impression, it was something that not only was nourishing in the moment, but again, continued throughout the last parts of seminary.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you did a great job. If I can give my vocation director a shout out.
Well, that's really what I was fishing for. So we're in the episode now.
But no, just reminded me, like you said, what we do seminary for, what we endure, you know, and not just like, oh my gosh, this is so hard, I have to endure it. But like how we, you know, are made, you know, how we're formed in the seminary, endure the fire of the forge in order to be a good tool.
And you are a tool.
Thank you so much.
Can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah.
It's hard to overstate how much of a tool you are.
I hate you.
Well, that's really the appropriate spot.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too. This is genuine communion of the priests of the diocese.
Yeah, baby.
How many conversations have you been a part of that ended with, I hate you. Just like siblings, that's how it goes. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Garrett.
This comes from a book I've been reading recently, Happy Are You Poor? By Father Dubay. So this, he's just talking about really priests and how they apply that reality. Jesus is calling us to poverty in our lives. So he says, the gospel leader is a person in love, and people in love are unconcerned about things irrelevant to their love. This positive absorption, this being in love with God, is perhaps the chief reason why a frugal way of life lends credibility to pastoral work. Modern men are weary of weavers of words, people who say beautiful things but do not live them. They are looking for authenticity, for heralds who have met God in deepening prayer and can speak of him from their hearts.
See you next week.